It's Monday 1st of September 2014. This is HPR episode 1586, entitled HPR Community News for August 2014, and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 72 minutes long. Feedback can be sent to admin@hackerpublicradio.org or by leaving a comment on this episode. The summary is, Dave and Ken review the happenings for the month.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and joining me this evening is...
Dave Morris.
Hi Dave, I don't think Ahuka's going to be joining us tonight.
No, he said he was off gallivanting around the Great Lakes somewhere or other.
Very good nice for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, this is a monthly show that is recorded for release on the first Monday of the month. Dave has gone... That turned out to be a very complicated thing, Dave, didn't it?
To actually compute that. Yeah. Sounds so easy, doesn't it? But yeah. Computers have difficulty with it, apparently.
Yeah, even Google, trying to do it in Google Calendar proved a bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the underlying iCalendar thing doesn't seem to be able to do it, strangely.
Okay. Anyway, anybody's welcome to join this. And indeed, as with everything on HPR, anyone's welcome to submit a show. And anyone's welcome to join in the discussions about HPR in general on the HPR mailing list. All this information is available on the HPR website, which is hackerpublicradio.org. As we do, usually we start with the traditional butchering of host names. And this being a normal month, I would like to welcome Inscius.
Inscius, I think he pronounces it. That's my recollection anyway.
Excellent. I do have a request for somebody to go out and take a WAV file, or generate a FLAC file of all the host names one after the other, come back. That would be very, very beneficial for me. I have a soundboard here.
That's a great idea.
But, yes. Anyway, I'm as you know, I can pronounce all these names perfectly. I just do it to lower the barrier entry to other hosts. Very big of me, I think. Anyways, as we also do, we just go through some of the shows to have a little chat about them. And continuing in the LibreOffice series, Mr. I'm Driving Around a Lake, Ahuka, brought us episode 34 in the LibreOffice series. And this one was on more on chart editing. And if you haven't downloaded the attachments for these two, it's very beneficial in what he's trying to do. And as always, he has full show notes available on his websites, which are linked to in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important if you want to follow this to look at Ahuka's site and also look at whatever he's put up to download. I can't understand them without doing that.
Yeah, I think I was able to follow them without issue, but then again, I've done quite a bit of graphing and stuff, so I suppose it's what you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the following Monday, we had HPR Community News, which was done by yourself and Ahuka. Actually, it was yourself and...
No, it's just me. Pigwell popped in briefly to mention poor 5150's problems and his contribution. This, not his contribution, the community's contributions for his benefit and the site thereof, which It's on the site, on the website, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, I put it on the main page there. So if you want a quick link, just go to hackerpublicradio.org and press support now. At this point in time, they're up to $3,123 of their $10,000 goal. And if they make the $10,000, then the Fund Anything campaign doesn't take as much of a cut. So this has been no harm to just get involved. I think they're in pretty good shape, you know, financially. But as you know, the insurance companies will try and put everything back as it was, but you know, you're never going to be able to cover everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you can help, that would be appreciated. Okay, the following day, we'll leave that up for until the fundraiser is over. We had multi-boot partitioning with Linux, and this was an episode by Mike McGrath, who's otherwise known as Geek Dad, LeetSpeak. And he was on about how to share his home directory, and I was wondering where he was going with this, actually, because I was thinking, well, if he's going to share his home directory, how then is he going to stop overwriting all the links and stuff? So I actually had a very similar approach, only I use slash data as it's clearer to me.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting thing to do. Years and years ago, I worked on a system called Deck Athena, which came from the Athena project, and that worked on the principle that you would bring client systems in of various sorts. So it was DOS-based PCs, Suns, HPs, Deck machines, etc. And they all had different architectures, but they all had to share the same home directory. And it was really difficult to set that up. So what he's doing there, really, I think, is very clever.
Yeah. Well, it also helps when you switch to something like a NAS drive or something for your home directory over there. Because then everything's all, you know, you just mount slash whatever. I can't remember what he used, but I just mount slash data, and then wherever that happens to be is where it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Okay, good. And the following day we had Blather speech recognition, which I had to laugh. I'm not jealous, obviously. I am jealous of John having this set up. I'm not jealous of the fact that John requires this to be set up, but for those of you who don't know, Jezra has put together this system where you can talk to your computer and it does stuff. It kicks off bash scripts. This is just so funny to listen to.
Yes. you must have great fun with this, saying silly things to him.
I would have for hours and hours and hours, it has to be said.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not dwell on that. Then we had what can only be described as a brilliant episode by Mike Gray on many-to-many data relationships. And it is a absolutely excellent description of how many-to-many relationships work out with very, very good show notes. Show notes, in fact, that have caused us immense amount of problems in more ways than one. But that's not Mike's fault. It's to do with the encoding of UTF-8, the encoding of XML, the parsing to archive.org. You can share some of that, Dave.
Yes, yes. It's all the less thans and greater thans and stuff that you have to encode. And although browsers often let you get away with it. You can put an actual greater than sign in your HTML. When you're passing it through various other things that are checking for that sort of stuff, then they just remove them, and that's what happens on the way to archive.org. So it was making a mess of poor Mike's notes as I was trying to upload them. So anyway, we've solved the problem now.
Not that he was doing anything wrong. It's just
he was doing fine. No, it was this strange pipeline that we have to poke things through.
Yeah. Anyway, we're all learning. No doubt there will be episodes coming from all of that. I popped that into the database series. So I'm doing a little bit of cleaning up on the series in the background as well.
Great idea.
We have JWP exploring the JFS file system, And I think, as you said last month, additional show notes will be required on this, but I'm really enjoying the series, actually.
It's great, isn't it? Yes, it's really nice to have all these listed out and pointed out for you. Then you can go off and hunt for more information if you want to, which I didn't even know about this one, to be honest. I didn't even know this one existed. That just shows how much I know.
I've seen it on lists, you know, when you're doing formatting drives and stuff, and you just go, ooh, well, cool. I'm looking for something that's familiar and safe, and I'll just use that. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Then we had the next day Ted Cho with a Yahoo mail forwarder, and I just can't believe that this. I mean, he's made a virtual machine to automatically slurp up his Yahoo account and put it into an IMAP account. I can't believe that Yahoo aren't doing IMAP.
Well, yes, I had difficulty understanding this, to be honest. I couldn't see why you needed to bounce between two Yahoo accounts. That's something very restrictive going on there.
Apparently Yahoo don't do. You have to go use their mail app to.
Well, I don't know. I have an old Yahoo account that I keep just because sometimes it's useful to direct things there, and I read it with IMAP from Thunderbird. So I'm not quite clear what the problem was here, to be honest, but. I'm probably missing something.
You might want to leave a comment on that episode, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Or here's an idea. You could do a show about it.
yeah. Well, I've always wanted to knit together all my mail accounts in this sort of way, but I've just not got around to it yet. So, it's a fascinating subject. I'd use something like Fetch Mail or something to bring them all to some central point, and then IMAP to look at them or something. But haven't solved that one yet.
I have my Raspberry Pi. I've got a IMAP server running that is only available on localhost, and I secure tunnel into that. And then I copy all my mail accounts into the various different folders, 2000 and whatever, 2014 / and then the month, the whole way.
Right.
And then that is on a mailer directory, and I just use rsync as part of my backups to copy that off other places. That gets around space limitations, and it also allows me to just grep, awk, and sed my email quite handily.
Okay. Yeah, that's quite good. I like to file my mail into folders, and I was a big procmail user back in the day, in the early days of email. So I'd quite like to build something around procmail again. But
sure. So. big list.
Yeah.
Then we had Fedora Scientific, Pharmaceutical Research, and Apache Opal and Climate Workbench. I like this newscast, Semiotic Robotics newscast. There's a lot of stuff on opensource.com, actually.
It is, yeah. I try and go and read them when I can from the pointers that we get from these shows, because there's some really fascinating stuff there, as you say.
The next day we had Make Your Own T-Shirts with Bleach, and I had a look at some of the ones that they've done, and they are awesome.
They're damn good, actually, aren't they? Yes, I would never have guessed that you could do something as clever as that. You must be able... The template that you make must be really, really well done, I guess, though. I'd probably screw that up.
Have you seen the there's about 12 steps to make the Hacker Public Radio one, and that's a nightmare, because you have to cut out all the bits and pieces.
I'm not quite sure what freezer paper is, though. It's something...
No, I have no idea.
Wax paper or something. Yeah, I wanted to find that out. It's obviously something that's fairly easy to come by in the States, but I'm not quite clear what it is.
Hold on, I know somebody here. Manon, do you know what freezer paper is?
Oh, paper. That, I suppose it's paper that doesn't stick to products.
Do we have it here?
I don't know. We might have it.
No, don't think so. It's a big generic, not really.
No, it's interesting to research a bit, because that looks like the ideal thing to do that type of stuff with. Okay,
cool. Moving on. Arts and Bots, Robots and Programming in the Liberal Arts Class. And this was a Plateau interview which he had in the for over a year in the emergency queue, which proves that the emergency queue should be removed.
Well, you not have any arguments from me.
Our researchers have just come back to us saying that it's called greaseproof paper in the UK.
Oh, right. Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Okay.
Okay, greaseproof paper.
Yeah.
Note to self, when I listen to this, it's greaseproof paper. Put it in the show notes.
Cool.
Okay, Arts and Bots, brilliant, liked this. Links in the show notes to this, what this is all about.
Yeah, that hummingbird board that they were referring to sounds pretty cool. If you go and look that one up, it's there's some amazing things you could do with that. So lucky kids having a shot on that thing.
True for you. So Introduction to Working with Functions in LibreOffice Calc by Ahuka, released on Friday the 15th. And this is just a basic introduction to what a function is and where you can find them. So it's laying the foundation for the next in the series. Then we have the story from
Inskius.
Thank you. On how he got into Linux. And another person coming in the Apple route.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised because over this side of the ocean, it's mostly via PCs that people come in.
I would have thought so. Yeah. I don't know many people myself who've come that way, but it's fascinating to hear. He had some great links in his.
But then he's from Sweden, so completely.
It's a whole different world there. It was quite interesting to hear about the national ID stuff and the specific machines. I forgot what it was now. ABC or something machine that
ABC was, and then
yeah, that was interesting.
He seemed thrilled at having a personal identity number.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? That's strange. I mean, from a computing point of view, it's an amazingly useful thing. From my days working in universities, we always said it would be fantastic if you had a unique way of identifying a person, because students would go and come back again and get different matriculation numbers. So you didn't know it was the same person till they showed up, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but on the other hand, who wants that, you know, stamped on your forehead or whatever?
Yeah. We have it here in the Netherlands, and I guess you have one. Regardless, like in Ireland, there's no postcodes, except there is a postcode, and the postal system uses it. Nobody else does, you know. So it's better everybody has access to it as opposed to nobody. I don't know. It's a. If you have thoughts on this subject, please send in the show. So then we had Introduction to Nicola and the Static Website and Blog Generation. This is becoming a bit of a series, actually, static website blog generations.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Yeah. These are fascinating things. I like this. This one sounded very good. I was impressed with this. I had to edit Guitar Man's notes, as did you. And there were problems with them. Not from his making.
He sent in the notes. I butchered it. I converted them to HTML, kind of. And then I didn't do it right. So there you go.
So there's been a lot of toing and froing with him about the layout of his notes and stuff. He's happy with them now, he said. But along the way, I read them many, many times, and was quite impressed with what I saw.
What's actually cool is that now that we do post the shows ahead of time, you know, once they come up, they're available, you know. The show is posted, the audio is there, you can release it, you can get it in the RSS feed if you add a few extra tags and stuff. And Chris Warwick, one of the developers, was able to come in and give us some updates and corrections on the website.
That's pretty cool. That was cool. Yeah, yeah. Makes it seem all the more up-to-date and appropriate.
Yeah, I still left them as they were because I want the show notes to reflect the audio, and then you can get the notes yourself. Then we had audiobook, How to Succeed in Evil, the HPR audiobook club.
I didn't actually listen to the book. I don't seem to find the time these days, but I really enjoyed the show. They were really going into a lot of depth with the subject matter. I thought they had a great discussion.
My summary was like, I liked the book, except for the fact it was basically lining up for a sequel.
Yes. I'm not great on superheroes and stuff. I'd have too literal a mind, I guess, at a boring old so-and-so. But still, I thought that their enthusiasm was quite interesting to listen to.
I actually found, after listening to the show, I didn't like the book as much. I don't know, maybe a month has passed since I listened to it and the show coming out, so had time to reflect on the book. I felt a bit shortchanged, even though I didn't pay anything for the book. But there you go. Okay, crowdsourcing air quality monitoring. Another one of those Plateau interviews about programmers, and these guys are trying to get a air quality detection system and basically crowdsource it, which is an ideal introductory project for anybody into hardware and stuff. So I'm very glad that Plateau agreed to release these ones from the backup queue so that we could draw attention to them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that they've done there. I didn't get too much depth myself because I needed to do more research, but seemed like it was something that anybody could build if they knew what they were doing. And having heard recently, there was news that came out that said London's air quality is on a par with Beijing and Mexico City or something, very poor, and nobody's made any particular note of this, you know. So you feel that if you had a device like this, you would know if you happen to be in a city that was particularly bad, you maybe want to get out of it.
Yeah, or you know, if these sort of things were dotted around the city and one in every neighborhood, or to use an American term, one in every block, that you could then put it on OpenStreetMaps or something and aggregate the data and then show areas where air quality is degraded over time, or, you know, at a particular time of the year. And link that in with weather stations showing which way the wind is going. And you would be able to identify basically culprits of, you know, where this air quality pollution is coming from. So, it's definitely, you know, something that people, you know, there are a lot of hackers out there who have put up weather stations. And should send in shows to PG64. Although I can't say anything to PG64 because I still have to edit that show I promised them. Anyway, yes, but if you're doing that, an air quality monitor would seem like a fairly obvious thing to add to it.
That would be good. I would like to own such a thing.
Okay, I think not the FAST and NTFS, but the FAT and NTFS file system was another one in the series. And this actually, a lot of information in there that I was not aware of.
No, I found that quite interesting. There was quite a bit of history there that JWP mentioned, and it was good to hear about these things in the historical context.
Absolutely. So the next one was Sensible Security, the Schneier model. And this was from Ahuka again. And it's in the Privacy and Security series.
I did enjoy this one. I thought he did this really, really well. I like his organization of the thing and the sort of checklist that he went through. It was Bruce Schneier's model that he was talking about. I know, but it was still good to lay that out in the way that he did. Stuff about, because I used to be a system manager and have fights with my senior managers who wanted stuff like these password expiries, and, you know, you can't use the same password again after, you know, kept a history of passwords and all that stuff. And I could never see the sense of that. I'm so delighted that Schneier has come up with a rebuttal of all this nonsense.
Yeah, I've implemented those things myself, and at the time thinking that they were good, but ever since that XKCD comic where the amount of entropy that you get from those things, I've just gone to using a massive big long passphrase. Well, actually, I've been using a massive big long passphrase for ages. Who am I kidding? But yes, there was a few things in this, though, that the only thing that I would disagree with, and again, this is only 0.0001% of the show, just to put things into perspective, was I would, and he did mention it in the show at the end, I wouldn't have any objection to somebody writing down their password, provided that, they wrote it down and, you know, kept it in their wallet and treated it like it was a 500 euro bill or a 500 pound bill.
Yes.
And that,
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yes, indeed. I've said the same. We did used to keep our master passwords written down and but locked away in the place I used to work. And, you know, so I don't see that's a huge lot different from having it secured away in a wallet.
Yeah, we used to, we changed the domain password so that myself, I put in half of the password and the other admins put in we each put in our own parts of the domain password and then give that in sealed envelopes and put it into the company safe. And then we all, you know, used elevated rights when we needed to.
Yes, yes, yes. Not too dissimilar from what we used to do. Yeah, good.
And it also feels very cool, you know, you're giving the envelope over with the piece of the password.
Yes.
Anyways, moving on. Another open source news break. This time, Tesla's patent decision, 12 challenges, and an update to the GNU Health project, all from opensource.com.
Yes, good stuff. That GNU Health thing sounds really good. I was quite impressed with that.
Then we had Akon DK.
Akon, I think he pronounced it. Akon DK.
Yes. You will know him from such podcasts as the Rivendell podcast, open source radio software, that sort of thing. So this is something that he is, you know, has experience with. So I haven't had a chance to look at the podcast software, but his show is Blue Drava podcast. Have you had a chance to listen to that yet? Or
I haven't listened to it. No. I did follow up the software. I was really impressed with it. The guy who wrote it had designed it for an academic scholastic setup where I think it was it in a college, but where they had decided that they wanted to use a podcast as a way of teaching students, and so he built this thing to provide a means of doing that. And I thought that was a fantastic idea, and the software looks really cool. I'd quite like to dig into that.
Okay, I also like his idea of having a voice version and a live version. I really, really don't like podcasts with music and backing music as well. Mm-hmm. The only thing is he doesn't have two separate feeds for that, so having two different feeds would be ideal, so then I wouldn't be downloading two different versions just to delete one.
Mm-hmm. I must check out his podcast.
Will do as well. Then we had an interview with Josh Knapp from honesthost.com, and they've basically set up a new company, and why it's important to us in HBR is they provide all the bandwidth, all the servers, two servers, all the bandwidth for Hacker Public Radio and also for the BinRev project. And Josh has been very instrumental in carrying, basically paying the bills himself for some time. And hats off to him. So on the bottom of the on the website, we have a link there to anhonesthost.com. And if you're thinking about hosting, you know, give them a shout.
Yes, it was an interesting show. That I know you said it was a bit like an advertisement in it, but that's a reasonable thing to do for a sponsor. I felt, you know, it's not too heavy.
Well, in fairness, Dave, you've seen firsthand yourself over the. We've migrated the server off, and there's been, you know, naturally a few teething issues with this, you know, the IP address range is changing, and overzealous firewall scripts and cPanel updates and stuff. And every one of those occasions, despite the fact that, you know, we're in a completely different time zone, fire off an email to Josh, and within a half an hour, the issue's been resolved.
Absolutely, yeah. He really seems to know what he's doing there. It's very impressive, I thought. And it was, I found it a fascinating insight into the world of running shared hosting and other type of things set up like that. I don't know. Maybe other people are much more knowledgeable about how this sort of stuff works, but I've never really delved into this. So I found that quite interesting.
It's I've done a little bit, obviously, coming from an ISP, but it's more from on the edge, having a look at it. So I really like for Josh to document what they're doing, because I'm sure everybody would be interested in a new business starting up, let alone a new tech business starting up. Mm. And he talks about stuff there with the assumption that everybody, of course, knows that they have these firewall tricky scripts that checks for suspicious activity, and I'm just completely in the dark about these whole thing, all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as I used to work in a university where there was a fair amount of this, because university is a bit like a little ISP for its students, and they're a very dangerous bunch as well as far as hacking into your systems are concerned. But what Josh is doing is on a whole different league, so it's very interesting to hear from my point of view.
Okay, then just the last thing on that, I did really like the whole concept of just paying somebody for a little WordPress blog and have them, and Josh and the guys take care of updating it, and you never have to worry about security flaws, you never have to worry about your family member getting slash dotted or something. It's just there for a reasonable price. I don't know, what was it, €5 or something, $5 a month, because yourself, as soon as you go on holiday, the phone rings. My website's gone down.
Yes. Oh, yes. No, it's good to be able to outsource all of that stuff.
Yeah, ideal Christmas gift, folks. I tell you not, a year thingy with 15% discount. Anyway, you heard it here, folks. Speaking of loan payments, the following day we had LibreOffice Calc. And he was working out a car loan, and I never thought to do this, actually. Very good.
It's not an area of spreadsheets I've ever delved into, to be honest, because, I never needed to. So I thought it was pretty good. I didn't realize that there were built-in functions to do this type of stuff.
Yeah, there's loads. This one I'd never come across before. Admitted, Dave, you'd have written a Perl script.
I'd have sold it from the ground up, yeah. Who wants spreadsheets?
You have a butterfly flutter over the hard disks so that they change the bits. Okay, that was that, wasn't it?
Okay.
Do you want to go through the comments?
Sure.
Are the comments the wrong way around?
Well, that's a good question, actually, because we debated how to do this, and the comments on, if you look at the whole comments on the website, they are in reverse chronological order, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I formatted this.
Stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I did it the same way, assuming that was going to be the most appropriate thing to do. But I must admit that last week when I was reading through these, I started from the bottom and worked up. Seems a little bit bizarre.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, because we have, with the other ones we also do is we have the top one is the oldest, and then work our way down to the newest.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
well, we can change the
radio. Anyways, Mike Ray, ORT, relating to
OTR, old time radio. All-time.
There again, that was 2013 going back.
Yes, comments. Somebody commented on this fairly recently, and I think it came up in the comments. Was it something I mentioned last week? I can't remember. So maybe brought it to people's attention, which means that reading the comments is a good thing, because it just sort of means that people don't have to read them themselves, I guess.
Yeah, just one sec. Yep, so old time radio, pretty cool. Then the following, we had Mike Ray about replying to your... No, it was the Journey comments on the next podcast. Oh, which one am I on?
This is, yeah. See, the summary of the comments like this in the notes are a little bit hard to follow. I found myself floundering slightly trying to do this last week. Because
I'm also looking at the comments page, the review, and I don't see the one Journey comments and the next audiobook.
1554, yeah, it's yeah. the last comment after the show there. And it's, hello team, fabulous choice, it starts. You not see that?
Okay, but it's out of sync with the other one. Why isn't it sorted the same way as the other one? Okay, anyway, let's deal with this issue offline.
Just to finish that thread, it's because the listing is picking them out, the software is picking them out by the fact that they have been sent in during the month that we're dealing with.
Right.
So yes. It looks a little strange just looking at this, but I mean, it represents reality, and that would be the way you would see it if you looked at the comments page, or indeed the RSS feed.
But the comments page, and they don't match up. That's the point.
You're looking at the full listing of the comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we need to, as you say, when you take this off, this is it's going to bore everybody. But it's an oddity because there are broken bits in the comment stuff. The comments are not being displayed properly by the HPR software.
Okay,
we need to get on that one.
Yeah, okay. Let's deal with that. More fun. Okay. What do we want to do?
So 1566 was Steve Bickle coming back to me after the last week's show saying how /etc is pronounced, because I'd said I always pronounce it etc, and he was pointing out that I was wrong and it should be Etsy. But And then followed an interesting discussion.
Yeah, and apparently you seem to get some support on that it was actually a reverse. I think Mike. Oh, I see what's going on with the comments. You're sorting every number and then sorting the comments underneath that number. Makes perfect sense. We might need to put a horizontal line or something in between.
Yeah.
All right. I get now. Ding. You see, folks, Dave's usually doing something that my brain just can't comprehend, and then finally a moment of revelation.
Sometimes I can't comprehend it either.
So how this would start would be Steve Bickle says how etc is pronounced, was his comments, saying that it should be not etc, but should be, what was it?
Etsy is what people say, because it's an acronym for it's extended text configuration.
Yeah, extended text configuration. So Etsy instead of etc. But then again, old phobies like yourself are saying no, that's a reverse engineering of the.
Not so much of the fogey, eh? youngster
says he who started the show with hello.
Yeah. But it's really not a thing to get too worked up about, but it's just an interesting discussion, I thought.
Okay, cool. So the other comment was, if we put in a horizontal line, that would make a lot more sense, actually. So
between
the comments episodes. Mm-hmm. So 1568, we had a comment from Klaatu, which this was about the John's conversation with his computer blather engine, and he's not interested in voice driven computers, but it was really nice. I kind of have to agree with him. Oh yes, the remaining comments was on 1569. A bit of a flame war started.
This is the fun of comments.
So the 1569 was the many-to-many database relationships, which Dave, you commented on, essentially saying, good show, difficult to convey in podcast, and the show notes help, which they do. But I was able to follow it in the podcast. I did listen to it twice just to prove that he was wrong. Prove that he was right. He, feels, however, that I should be convinced by his arguments. And while it was a brilliant explanation of how a many-to-many database works, he, I felt, failed to explain to me why it was that a many-to-many relationship was necessary and why a simpler comma-separated table wouldn't work. To which he replied, it was scalability. And to which I replied, I could fit a 10,000 comma-separated hosts in before I'd have to worry about it. To which he replied that mainframe programmers took the same approach back in the 1990s, and look what happened. To which I replied, I basically did some maths, and it would be a problem in 2319, and even if everybody lived to 370, it would still take 5 hours to introduce everybody onto the hosts. So more than likely, we just put them under various hosts and forget about it. So to which he replied, going, he's now going to set up a host name with a comma in it. To which I'm now replying, saying, fire ahead, because I'll assign you number 207 like everybody else. Yes, I get that it's more elegant to do this way, but the whole point is, if you're looking at moving to something like a system that isn't database driven, you know, that's file based driven, or that's template driven, or that's bash script driven, then we should try and keep it as flat as possible.
Well, if you've got a database then which has all database, of the capabilities of a database. Dave. Yes, but if you have one, which you have, then use its features would be my argument. If you're going to then convert it to an XML database, the features of the database will be very useful in doing that conversion, because otherwise you're going to lose stuff. As has happened in the past, we've had issues where certain rules of database design were overlooked, and we had hosts that seemed to exist as two different people in various places in the database. That's a different issue, I know, but rules of database design are there because they help you to keep it under control and produce an efficient end result. I know that efficiency is not a big deal. It's a teeny tiny database, in fact. But I appreciate that. But still, these things, if you don't do it, they come back and bite you. Is what pragmatic experience would say.
Absolutely. And now I'm in complete and total agreement with you, right? But if you're maintaining I'm struggling for an analogy here with. But the point is, we're not maintaining a database. We're maintaining metadata related to shows. That is distributed in an XML file that's collapsed into an XML file, which theoretically you could use the XML file to regenerate the database. Every piece of information that we have in the XML file can be used to regenerate the database. The database, following good structures for the tool that we're using, is fine, but I don't want to be religious about it if you can take a hack and use the hack. Code, time and time again, if you go look at the HTML5 standards page, which is an excellent page there, remind myself to add it to the show notes, dive into HTML5. If you read that website, he makes the comment that loads and loads of people suggested things, elegant ways of implementing things. And what actually won at the end of the day was the code that shipped. And it shipped because it was easier to make and faster to maintain and simpler.
Yes, yes. Because HTML has been a cause of huge amounts of pain and effort over the years, hasn't it? Because it has been a standard which has been very, very sloppy.
You know, the
early HTML was bad, and then it was badly spec'd, and people implemented it badly, and Microsoft came in on the act and screwed things up royally, as they want to do, etc., etc. You know,
well,
and
defending them a little, is it screwing up that you fix somebody's page that it displays correctly? Yeah, okay. You know, you're right. They screwed things up royally with their active X components and stuff like that. Yeah. So
that's all these years of people having to write huge amounts of JavaScript and whatever in their pages in order to say if it's this browser, then do this. If it's that browser, do the other. I'm not an HTML expert, but I've looked at them. I had to maintain them on occasion, and you know it's been a nightmare because of lack of standardization and rigorous control of this type of stuff.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't know which part of me I'm. As I say at the end of that, I'm struggling, you know, not to answer like because it's more elegant to do it properly. So. There was one argument. I would still like a good argument for why comma separated value in our case doesn't work out properly, and I'll leave that up to you or Mike, and I will ignore the fact that I intend to implement not only what he suggests for the host table, but also for the series table, because it's come to my attention now that we could very well have an accessibility interview. So a topic on accessibility, which happens to be also an interview, which happens to be also something that is something else. So we might want to link multiple series as well to a particular show.
Mm-hmm,
but cast that from your mind. I still want a show on why what I'm trying to do is wrong.
Yes, yes. I did at one point start trying to design a database, put together a database design using the comma thing. I sort of got lost doing something else, but I think somebody will do this, I'm sure.
And I'm sure also people are bored senseless about this comma discussion.
The
argument against my reasoning for do this is while the comma thing is fine for bringing out the shows, if you are on the website and you want to click on an author, or on a host and find out what shows that they have been on, then the comma thing won't help you at all because you'll have to search for that string in every episode. So that would be a bit kludgy.
Indeed. And if you want to count the number of shows a given person's done and all of that sort of stuff, then it's how the hell are you going to make indexes that will do that nice and quickly?
Yes, but there's only 250. The machine's got gigaquads of memory.
Yeah.
I know it goes against everything that I believe as well, but it goes back to the day like where somebody refused to do an efficient database because they had so much RAM in the machine that it was only like 500 megs of a database, so they'd put everything into RAM and they didn't have to worry about it. And I just went home and had a shower.
Oh, yes, yes. We've met this sort of stuff. I've worked with those sorts of people. And they're often managers, actually, but there you go.
This is a developer. Okay, but anyway, they were developing in Java, so anyways. JWP saying JFS works fine for me from Tlatu. So then we had Guitar Man with the comments on 1577, which was the static site generation.
That's his show. I think he's replying to X1101.
Yes, who said?
Scrolling, trying to find the comment. Who said, he said he was about to build something like this himself and thought Nicola was great.
So cool.
By the way, I told you his handle was X1101 and I was wrong. It's X1101 he likes to be called. So get that straight now.
X1101.
Yes.
Okay, let's look at the mail list, which is essentially HPR's parliament, I guess. And going back in time to what month were we?
August, you want?
August. Next two audiobook clubs by X1101. And then we had Feelings About Flatter by Deep Geek, which was a discussion about flattering for HPR contribution in host or HPR being flatterable itself to defray the costs. And George from who is Pegwall from Cerebral Rift. He has a podcast.
No, it's Sound Chaser.
Sorry, Sound Chaser. Yes, yes, yes. And thank you very much. He had something to say about that. So if you want to comment on that, you can find the thread. And Klaatu punched in there, and they with some other comments as well. So if you have some feedback on that, give us a add to that. Any thoughts yourself?
I am still trying to find my way around the... See, now, last week I actually summarized all the mail into the notes, but I didn't do that this time. I get a bit lost in the mail. Unless I've got it all nicely organized and threaded, I have a difficulty following it.
I bring all that. I subscribe to this feed in Thunderbird, and it's just there as a news reader, which copy into
the RSS. From Gmail, you mean?
Yeah, from Gmail. Yeah. No, I subscribe to the news on not the RSS, but the news service itself.
Oh, Usenet News.
Usenet News, yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't bother.
A protocol that's fallen out of favor, I think.
I used to use Usenet News all the time back in the pre-internet days.
Which was the internet.
It was indeed, yeah. Oh. I found a book recently, a free book, it's an e-book that was written by the UK networking authority, whose name is Janet, and they were talking about the history of Janet and its very, very early days. It's quite fascinating reading, because I was around and involved, indeed coding bits of it in those days. And it was all Usenet. It was people throwing vast quantities of Usenet news between one another.
It's a protocol that could be resurrected, I think. Ex-colleague of mine had some really cool ideas about how to use it as a basis for other things as well. It's as a massively distributed messaging system. It's also unfederated, so, you know, things just go through. So pretty interesting.
We had local news groups at the university I worked at, so we used to use Usenet News a big time. It was a local communications method, as well as, you know, comp OS, this, that, and the others, and all of those things. And you learned how to do flaming and how to do replies to people properly. And if you dared, format it wrongly, then you would be torn to shreds. And it was terrible. Yeah, I should do a show about this, the history of all these jolly things. Don't top post. It's a deadly thing to do.
Unless it makes the accessibility very difficult for you.
That's a whole different issue. Yes, I do appreciate that. But back in those days, that was not a consideration.
Okay, moving on. There is a new German podcast. It is Linux Unicast. .net, and I was shocked to find out that I could pick up 90% of it, so I've started listening to that as a way to improve my German. So give it a go. Let the guys flow over you, and if nothing else, it makes you aware that they're not all podcasters from Germany own motorbikes and refuse to do shows on Hacker Public Radio. Not pointing at anybody in particular.
No.
Anyways, Star Drifter RSS had some issues and got fixed.
Yes, Lost in Bronx was having difficulties with his feeds. I think probably the server was down that day or something, was hiccuping or something. But there had been some problems with the feeds on that site earlier on in the month.
Yeah, and then we had Josh telling us that the move is finished, and it's everything is new and shiny and fast, and now that I'm not blocked anymore for doing suspicious activity like having 15 different sessions open and stuff, I can get in. And then the last was just the announcement of the community news, and that, I'm afraid, is that there's some apologies due to Guitar Man for messing up A, his attribution, and B, the show notes, and Semiotic Robotic for mixing up the shows. When I was editing some of the shows, I had to go back and re-edit all the shows, so I got some of them mixed up. Warning to everybody that they to check for the new intro and outro. It's actually better if you don't put the intro and outro on now, just because then we can do leveling a lot better on the incoming side. We do leveling of your audio, and then we level that with the intro and outro, and then with the another thing, which is the text-to-speech summary. Dave, have you heard any of the text-to-speech summary shows yet?
I haven't, no, no. Which ones have they been?
Your show, the HPR Community News, was the first one.
Oh, right, right.
So what I do is if you go to HPR, hackerpublicradio.org/say.php?ID=, and the show number, you'll get a text file, which is compiled by the website, and I parse that and then do the text-to-speech on it. So, for example, for this show, the summary will have been, it's Monday the 1st of September 2014. This is HPR episode 1586, entitled HPR News, Community News for August 14th, and as part of the series HPR Community News. This is hosted by HPR for Volunteers and is about 0 minutes long, which I'll fix as soon as I put that in. And feedback can be sent to admin@hackandpublicradio.org or leaving comments on the episode. The summary is --, which is what it is at the moment, but will be filled in later on. So that actually means that shows need to get posted onto the database first, and then when I'm doing the coding, I can just pull everything down from that. So this takes care of the tags, it takes care of the text-to-speech at the beginning, and that also allows us to add in things, I guess, reminders, cool. I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. What's happening to shows that are going up to archive.org? Have you got a different...
What happens is I download this, and then we have the... this is played first. That way anybody listening to the shows can decide whether they want... it's of interest to them, whether it's something better for listening in the car. Actually, something I need to put in here as well is if it's not a normal Creative Commons license, I need to put that in. Mm-hmm. And if the flag if it's safe for work or not, that might be something to put in there, possibly, mm-hmm. possibly not. I'll need to think about that. Or actually, I don't. People need to send in comments about whether what exactly should be in that introduction thing. You have the text-to-speak introduction. Then you've got the mention of the sponsor, which for the stuff on honesthost.com, which is on hackerpublicradio.org, those ones will be obviously mentioning in honesthost.com and currently mentioning the discount code. And later on, if Josh or the guys want to announce any other things there, that will be added. And then, as shows come in, they will naturally pick up the new ad. Mm-hmm. And the ones going to archive.org get the archive.org one. Cool. And then the intro and outro goes in, then the show itself. So the intro goes in, the show itself, and then the outro goes in. So
very good. That's very impressive now.
So if people want to record their own stuff, they can do that, and they can signal it in the show notes. But then if you're doing that and you need to know about levels, make sure everything is nice and leveled the whole way across. And also if you're not worried about that, just send in the show without an intro and outro. That's probably as handy for everybody. People who want to do HPR intro is just the HPR intro. That there was a discussion before, and there was a lot of people did not want that to change in any way, so we're leaving that as it is until there's overwhelming discussion on the mail list to tell us to do otherwise. But the outro can be HPR inspired music, so if there are musicians out there and want to do a HPR bedding music and they want to put in the audio track of Man on My Wife Who Did That, or you want to do an audio track yourself, or whether you want to mix both of them, then that's all available. You can do that, and that's up on the websites. on the website with a link in the on the contribute page. Cool. So other things that has happened on the website is started tidying up the some of the series, which is why don't tell Mike or anything. I'm thinking of putting in a linked table so that you can have multiple series. And I still want to get another episode out of him. And so I put in a new series called Accessibility. I was shocked that we didn't have that already. Some of the other series that are in there that are that only have two, you know, I have less than three episodes in them, will be added to the tags. That's an ongoing thing. I'm just going to do it as I do it. We today switched everything end to end on the database to UTF-8. So be aware that there might be some UTF-8 issues. I didn't. None of them jumped out at me so far.
I think it's looking good. I've not really sampled it in huge amount of detail, but I went and looked at a few shows that had quite a lot of UTF-8 stuff, Unicode stuff in, and they looked absolutely perfect. So,
yep. As did hopefully yesterday.
Hopefully everything's good.
Yeah, so that's cool. If anybody notices anything weird, give us a shout, obviously. There is one thing that I put in today to fix something that we will need to keep a track on, and that's escaped quotations and single quotes and stuff, so it may look funny in some of the feeds, but we'll keep an eye on that one.
There's a whole load of weird escaped quotes in the comments. I mean, nobody will have seen this probably because it's visible in the database, but the comment system seems to put them in on the way in and take them out on the way out. I don't know what the hell that's all about. But.
Yeah, and I think we may have the same thing now. So we'll keep an eye on it. It's just something, just so you know that if you're expecting some major change to come along, that hasn't happened yet, and you're wondering why the our limited amount of volunteer time to work on this volunteer effort is spent doing other stuff. Today we added the downloads to, against my better judgment, to the episode table, so that might start appearing shortly. I have made the unilateral decision to only show the hits from a month ago, because for a start, they're only given out every month, so the processing for this month hasn't finished yet. So that's reason number one. I've also taken the unilateral decision that if anything has got an order of 10 times more hits than any of the other shows, it gets truncated down until I can figure out what it is. I'm saying right here and right now that upload and download thing will, the number of downloads that you have may increase or decrease depending on if we discover that the filtering is, if sites have been hit by robots or been hit by spammers or has been hit by whatever. So absolutely no guarantee as to what that is. And to be honest, I have better things to be doing, which is vis-a-vis the upload thing, which I was almost finished with. And then I had an epiphany in the basement where I decided it was all done wrong.
Oh no.
Yeah. Well, I was writing the, I was updating the how to, or the contribute page to describe everything. And then I was going, this just makes no sense. Why would I be asking this at this point? So I completely simplify that. So now you will go to the calendar page, or if you want to, you can go to the calendar page and click on, you know, where it says is available will be a link to record reserve now. So you click that, and then it will just ask you for your email address, you know, the show name and the email address and nothing else, the show number and the email address and nothing else. And then you get an email, and then you have 30 minutes to come back with you know, a validation that you have that, that's a valid working email address, and you have a valid lock. And in that time, it'll be reserved for 30 minutes. And if you don't come back in 30 minutes, it'll be locked to you. You can't add another show. And if you go to five other IP addresses, then the whole upload system stops until we can figure out what's going on. So call me paranoid. So then once you get the lock, you have 24 hours to, or you have some longer amount of time, which might be anything from, I don't know, half an hour to 24 hours to actually fill in the thing. And you do your upload, and there you'll be able to edit your show notes, and you'll be able to edit your photo and your bio and all that sort of stuff as well. So I'm kind of thinking there that if, you know, you're given this key, then with that key, if you keep it safe, you can then go back and edit your own show notes later on.
Good idea. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then with the catch it that you're not going to be adding anything to the database. All of this is just dumped onto a text file in a directory that you can't execute anything on. And then that's pulled off to another server, which might be my own laptop. And then we do the checks on it. And we're also added a PGP key thing to the profiles, which should be coming up in your host details. And the idea there is that if you sign your, if you're a known host, as in you've submitted a show before, and then you put your key in, that will add a level of weight to the process. Not saying that it'll be automatic, but it might be more. So if a show comes in with Dave, and we know this is Dave Key, and we can assume that Dave, you know, the level of trust on Dave's key is high, that will automatically get posted without anybody needing to approve it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds okay?
Yeah, cool. Very cool. Because that reduces the amount of work that you have to do to hack around with this stuff.
And I'll say it before.
This is fantastic.
And I'll say it again. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. My entire purpose of coming on here was to get HBR... was to get HBR so that it wasn't dying. And I think we can look at the queue. It's nice and healthy. You need to keep sending in shows, folks. You must keep sending in shows. But it's nice and healthy at the moment. We're coming into the autumn the fall in the Northern Hemisphere. So we expect lots of shows from snowbound individuals. But my overall motto is to replace myself with a script as soon as possible. And that is... That's been the plan all along.
Yeah. Very good. Some quite significant advances being made here. I'm impressed.
Yeah, and I've also been thinking that we should have a Wikipedia page. So I would like to expand out the about page. Well, I mean, I don't know whether we should or we shouldn't. The point of it is that we're never going to have a Wikipedia page, because anybody who shows any interest in HBR should be recording a show for me. And at that point, if they're recording a show, then they are obviously not allowed to edit Wikipedia pages because they're part of HBR.
Yes.
But I have looked at some of the websites and what Wikipedia has as a... site of interest or whatever is very vague. I mean, some sites have got you know, this isn't noteworthy enough, and then other sites / shows, and you think, okay, why have they got a why is their site up there? But anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah, it seems a little arbitrary and somewhat nuanced by certain opinions, but as you say, it is as it is.
One thing we should do though is on the about page, which we do, is we have links to stuff that's in the press. But I'd also like to put in, because that's like verifiable links to places that we are mentioned and reviewed and stuff. So there's 6 different articles there now. So if we're in any print magazines or stuff like that, then, you know, that they seem to like physical real world presence. I would also like to go back and see, you know, collect underneath there in the press, or have another section on the about page relating to the number of places where we have been, you know, events that we have attended or there has been a HPR representation at, for example, Og Camp. All the odd camps that we've been at, all the Northeast Linux Fests, all the Southeast Linux Fests, FOSDEM last year, FOSDEM this year, next year, FOSDEM this year, FOSDEM next year, that sort of thing. So we can get we've been physically on the ground covering these events.
Uh-huh.
Kansas City Maker Faire, that sort of thing, you know. it should all be in the archives. I should be able to pull that up myself, actually. And again, if you have any comments, the mailing list is there for that sort of thing. And at a minute, an hour 14, I think we should stop.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay, Joe, take us out with the free software song, Dave.
That is just not going to happen, Ken, I'm afraid.
Join us now. All we need is somebody playing that on the bagpipes, you know, with the Debian kilt on, standing on Edinburgh Castle, looking down, playing the...
Well, when I meet somebody who's up for that, I'll let you know.
I know you happen to know a few musicians, my friend.
I do, actually. Yes, indeed.
Some of the musicians listening, we want HBR theme music. Thank you very much. Join us now and share the software.
Oh, God.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.